And I just had this opportunity to interview hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people while at Amazon and then similar at Sony PlayStation. And that experience not only got me really close to, you know, exactly what it is that differentiates, you know, the people who land the role from those who miss out.
Welcome back to Insights by Design. We're excited to have Andrew Jones with us today. Andrew, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
We're so happy to have you. We've been following you on LinkedIn for a long time. I've watched your YouTube videos, and we're excited to speak with you today. Andrew, for those who aren't familiar with you, would you mind just giving a quick background?
Yeah, I can. So, if I start way back, so I am originally from New Zealand. But I now live in the United Kingdom, and I have done for the last 14 or 15 years, which is why I have a little bit of a hybrid accent that you might not be able to place. So I grew up in New Zealand, went to university in New Zealand, and then worked for a little bit. Interestingly, thinking about what I do now, I didn't study data science or computer science or math or anything like this. I did degrees in marketing, and I did another degree in psychology. Which thinking about, you know, where I am today and where my passion exists today, I find very interesting. And I think it's actually a huge positive that I came from another field in that sense. So I literally stumbled into my first role through a cricket team that I was playing in, and the manager was looking for somebody who, like a data analyst position. And I was about to graduate from university. And I was talking to him, and I said, you know, I like math. I've got a marketing degree, and it was a marketing analyst role. And he said, you should just apply for the role. And I did, and I managed to get the job. And I started learning SAS, and I started learning SQL, and I loved it. Something about it, the idea that you can, and it seems quite simple now, the things I was doing, you know, as you progress your career, but using SQL or SAS just to pull data and manipulate data and see things moving. And I honestly didn't know, because I was coming from a different background, I didn't know you could necessarily code for a job. I knew there were people who were like software developers and things, but I didn't know about this type of thing. And then I sort of landed in it, and something in my brain just loved it. And then, you know, stepping into the next role where there was a little bit of machine learning, for example, predicting customers that might churn, you know, leave the business. And then next month, seeing the analysis of who did leave, and there was this big crossover between the ones who were predicted to leave and the ones who did leave. And it was like this magic. It sort of lit something up in my brain. So I just said, I have to do this. I have to keep moving in this field. So I ended up moving to the UK and have just happened to stay here. And just moved through roles and slowly, you know, getting more and more exposure to machine learning and deep learning and these things, because they fascinated me so much. And then, you know, I worked for Amazon for a couple of years, which was really eye-opening and a great role that's opened a lot of doors. I consulted at Sony PlayStation, which was probably the most fun job I've had. You know, I had a PlayStation at my desk, and when we needed to collect data to build a prototype for a product for the PlayStation 5, what it was, we would literally have to play the game. So we would sit there playing the game for, you know, with the excuse of, oh, we just need to create some more data. So that was by far the most fun proper job I've had. And then in 2020, I was consulting, I was sort of working as a contractor at PlayStation, and there were some tax changes in the UK, tax regulation changes, and it meant that the way contractors were working was no longer going to be allowed to work in that fashion. So the contractor market, just the bottom sort of fell out of it. And so I was going to just naturally, with all of the other contractors, be let go, and they offer you permanent roles, but it's not quite the same. So I decided this is the moment. You know, I've always wanted to do something myself. I didn't know what that was. I thought about starting consultancies and all sorts of things, but I'd been squirreling away so much code, you know, and ideas and logic, you know, just things that I built, things that I've thought of over time. And I had all of this stuff, and I'd also interviewed all of these people at these roles, and I thought I can maybe create something which, you know, there's a gap in the market for people who are looking to get into data science, but they're not able to do it. So I ended up building what is Data Science Infinity now, which is 3.5 years old, which is crazy to me to think that. And now that's my full-time job. So I teach people the core skills and tools for data science, and I also help them, you know, with the hiring process in the private group, you know, supporting them across their entire journey from absolute beginner right through to landing a role. And I couldn't be happier. Honestly, it's like, you know, I said PlayStation was the most fun job. I mean, this is the most rewarding job. I love what I do.
Thank you for that. And I've been following what Data Science Infinity does. And one of the reasons that I wanted to speak with you is because of your research foundation of what it takes to get into and be successful in data analytics and data science. How did you decide to take the approach of researched back skills versus just using your personal experience of, oh, here's what I saw data analysts and data scientists do, here's what I'm going to teach? You're constantly putting out research of here's what jobs are looking for.
So in terms of why I built Data Science Infinity in the way I did, so that goes back to the fact when I was working at Amazon and PlayStation, I was really, really fortunate. And I didn't think it was necessarily fortunate at the time, but I was in the position where I was interviewing for new people into the company. And this was primarily at Amazon because they're always interviewing to bring people in. And they have one of the hardest but also most efficient hiring processes, you know, in the market. It's why they're, you know, people struggle to get into these companies, but also why they're so in demand, you know, and why they get the best people in. And I just had this opportunity to interview hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people while at Amazon and then similar at Sony PlayStation. And that experience not only got me really close to, you know, exactly what it is that differentiates, you know, the people who land the role from those who miss out, which is really valuable for what I do now. But it also showed me that there was this huge gap in the market where, whether it was a boot camp or it was free content or it was even like master's degrees from pretty prestigious institutions around the world for data science, students just weren't getting results. And I think it probably came from the fact that data science really exploded. So everybody was looking to offer a data science or data analytics program of some sort, and then they'd look to scale it as quickly as possible, and the quality and the value of the program itself went way down. Nobody was really offering help around how to actually get into the field. So they'd teach you a bunch of stuff, but they wouldn't help you turn that into value, almost like how do you get to the finish line. And the other thing that I noticed was people were learning all sorts of things, but it wasn't necessarily the things that were crossing over with what the industry wanted. And I thought this is a huge gap in the market. Well, you know, some people were trying to do it. It's not like nobody was teaching SQL or whatever, but there was this huge gap in the market where I thought I can build something that's better. And one of those things was, I don't want to just teach what I think is the most interesting or what I think is cool or what I have done or what I feel most confident in. I want to teach what gets people results. And that to me just has to be, what is it that's going to tick the most boxes when you go into an interview process? If you're putting probability into your favor, what are the things that you need to know? So I thought, well, I can try and guess what that is, you know, but that's not good enough, right? You know, if you're a good data scientist or data analyst, you're not going to take a sample of one and rely on it, right? It just doesn't work like that. So I thought, I need more data. So I went out and started interviewing and talking to hiring managers, recruiters, and, you know, just general leaders in the field, and said, what is it that you're using in your role? What is it that's adding value in your team? And bypassing even job descriptions, because we know how bad job descriptions are. We know how they're not really aligned to the role. Some companies are getting better at this. But bypassing that, having an actual conversation with them and saying, what are you using? How are you using it? Why are you using that? And then sort of compiling all of that data. And I've continued to have these conversations over time to make sure I, you know, update my view of the market. And so the curriculum of Data Science Infinity is completely driven by that. And there's some super obvious ones in there, you know, SQL, Python, Tableau, etc. But it's more than that. It sort of comes down to, what are the use cases when we're building projects in the course, which go into your portfolio? What are the types of things that hiring managers are really looking for, or the things that are really adding value in their team? Well, let's build a project on that so you can show that And instantly you've connected with them because you're solving a problem that they have or something they do day in, day out. So that it's sort of all focused on you going in and being confident that they're going to see your value. So to me as a data scientist, not going with the sample of one, going, I'm going to get a lot of data. I mean, that just makes sense. That's what we do. But nobody seems to be doing that. There were so many instructors just doing what they thought was the most exciting thing. And that's not necessarily what translates to results. So that's kind of my thought process behind it. And like I say, I continue that now. I continue to have these conversations to make sure that what I'm teaching is on point.
By way of clarification, Andrew, we've heard you mention data science and data analytics. What would you say is the difference between a data scientist and a data analyst?
So it depends. There isn't a one black and white answer to that question, because one company's data analyst might be another company's data scientist. They've really blended. Data science is such a broad term these days. Data analytics is such a broad term. There is a lot of crossover. If you were looking for where they cross over less, you'd find less analysts doing sort of more heavy machine learning work or deep learning work, whereas you'd find maybe more analysts doing business intelligence type work, building reports type thing. You know, that would be the general way. But to be honest, when I've been working as a data scientist, and a lot of the data scientists that I know and that I've worked with, a lot of it is still analysis in one sense, right? You're not just taking the data and just using it and not thinking about it. You are thinking about what does it say, what are the insights, and sort of reporting that back to the business. You might go on and build something with a machine learning model, for example, but the roles are so, there's a lot of crossover now, and that spectrum continues out towards data engineering, where even they have a crossover with those two roles. But they do, you know, there's some niche things which they sort of do that data scientists do less often in most roles, and data analysts would do even less often. So I don't think there's a specific difference that you can pin down. In fact, you know, from the students who come out of Data Science Infinity, data scientist is the most common job that they get, but data analyst is right behind it. And then all of the variations, you know, product analyst, insight analyst, decision scientist, etc. There's so many titles these days. Data scientist is becoming a less common job title, I think, but all of those things that fit into data science are still, you know, people are coming out of the course and landing all of these different job titles now, whereas before they'd go out and they'd kind of land a data science role. So it's an interesting question. I think that landscape is still evolving, but data science is becoming a little bit more pure now, especially with the breakoff of data engineering. That was a huge win for data science as a field, because, you know, people thought we'll bring in a data scientist and they'll fix everything. You know, it was like a panacea for all things data related. And we learned very quickly that wasn't the case. There was a reliance on what has now become data engineering that wasn't being done. And now we've done that. A lot of companies have hired one or two data engineers, and that really blew up. And now that's leveling off, because most companies don't need more than a couple of data engineers, unless you've got, you know, novel new data coming in all the time. It becomes more of a maintenance job. So it's been an interesting sort of 2-3 years for every data engineer that people brought in. Now they've got the data in place and it's clean and the pipelines are there. And, you know, now they can bring in the data scientists to start adding value again. So data science sort of plateaued and data engineering grew out of it. And now we're going to see data analytics and data science really flourish again because of data engineering.
I love that. Yeah, I remember seeing a lot of job postings for full stack data scientists, and what they really wanted was a data engineer, which is why your approach is so important, because job postings aren't reliable. A lot of times it's edge cases and just a wish list, and the job titles don't necessarily make sense or correspond with what the actual duties of the role are. With that, what new skills are you seeing that are critical for either a data analyst or a data scientist to have to be successful?
So I think from a data scientist point of view, that touching on the last point I was making, I think almost like the best role, almost if you were to put yourself in the best position going forward, you know, for a career in data around the data science area. I think it's a data scientist who knows the ins and out of data engineering. I think we're going to see data engineering. We saw it really spike, and I think that's going to level off. And now we're going to see data science and data analytics grow alongside it again. But it is, it's those things which can mean you can deal with the data as well. So I think for a data scientist or a data analyst, knowing, you know, feeling pretty confident with GitHub, for example, whereas people might not have before, a cloud platform, I think is something that everybody needs to know now. I'm currently in the trenches of building out the new section on the cloud and AWS for Data Science Infinity, because over time, it's, you know, the hiring managers I'm talking to over time, it's becoming more and more and more common for them to be asking for that of data analysts and data scientists to have a good grasp of AWS or Azure or GCP or just knowing the concepts in general. So to me, that means I have to build that into the course now. Something like Docker, you know, as a tool, it's good to know how that works, I think. So I actually outsourced that to Andreas Kretz, who's a data engineering instructor and coach. And I said to him, could you build a section on Docker? Because you're the expert there. And so I've integrated that into Data Science Infinity. I'm going to do more and more of that with experts in other fields. You know, as soon as it becomes something that reaches a critical mass of hiring managers saying, this is what we're needing and this is what we're using, then I'll build that into the program. So people will always be evolving and developing their skills over time. But I think, yeah, like to go back to the start there, that there's things which just aren't evolving. You know, the need for SQL, the need for, you know, a pretty good base understanding of statistics and then some other math and things like Python's not going anywhere. R, you know, it's a great language as well. Tableau, data visualization, you know, these things aren't going anywhere. But there are evolutions. There always are evolutions. And I just try and keep up with those in the course.
So based on the industry trends you're seeing, Andrew, would you recommend that analysts position themselves as a specialist or as a generalist in the job market at this point in time?
I don't advise people specifically for either. I think there's enough generalist roles out there and there's enough specialist roles out there. The other thing is, for people that I'm teaching, you're often early in your career, and I don't think it's necessarily a good idea to all of a sudden go super specialized at the start, because you're missing out on the foundational layer of knowledge. And a lot of what my career has been built on, and a lot of other data scientists and data analysts and data engineers that I know, is they've built up that generalist skill set to start with, because that helps them specialize, because A, they know what they enjoy or what they're passionate about, but it all of that knowledge helps them go up whatever path they want, because you get to a point where you can be very specialized in computer vision, for example. But you can be, because you know in what situation should I use this particular tool or this particular skill or this particular concept, because I know how everything else works at a base level, and I can go and investigate that. I can weigh up the pros and cons. I can make a good decision. I don't think specializing super early and, you know, being super intense with that specialization is a good thing. I think you should be general to start with, and then let your passion drive your specialization rather than really relying on the market. I don't see any situation where jobs are going to be limited to one specialty. I think it's all about doing what you enjoy and what you find yourself good at, and those things often cross over.
So pick your poison.
Yeah, exactly. Follow your heart, but you know, build up the core set first, because that's going to help you so much more than you think.
And Data Science Infinity, not only is it a robust program, but you also put out a lot of free resources, both through webinars and also on YouTube and LinkedIn. Your YouTube has grown a lot, and I find it very helpful. In fact, sometimes I send some of my grad students there for your statistics videos. What motivated you to create the YouTube channel?
So I've always primarily been on LinkedIn. So the reality for me now, and this is probably different for a lot of other people, is I'm running a business myself, right? And I need to tell people about that so they know about it and they can see why it's good or why it might be a fit for them. And so therefore, a lot of what you do is, you know, selfishly thinking, how can I reach people? But the other part of it is, you know, I post on LinkedIn every day, and I have done for a long, long time, and have built up my network there. But there's a limit. They're very different, LinkedIn and YouTube. LinkedIn, you post something, and then 3 days later, it sort of disappeared off into the ether, right, into the abyss. It's gone. You can still find it, but it's gone. Whereas YouTube, you can post really deep, thoughtful things, and they stay there for a long time. I mean, you think about the things that you or I go and find on YouTube to help us on, you know, like you say, you've sent some people to my statistics channel, but there's things I go and find, and it's like 12 years old, and you know that that video is still ticking up and helping people. And I love that idea. It's not YouTube's not something that I've had enough time to really focus on. It has really grown. Actually, something that's really cool, this literally arrived today, by the way. Talking about the growth of my channel, I can show this as well. This literally arrived in the mail today. I'll show you. So this is the 100,000 subscribers plaque.
All this right,
just turned up before the podcast.
That's
congratulations.
Awesome.
Yeah,
thank you. It's a weird one because, like I say, I've not, you know, LinkedIn's always been my number one social network, I guess, mm-hmm. and that's where I put a lot of my effort. And YouTube's been something where I've used it, but I haven't really invested myself in it yet. So I've had a couple of videos that did really well, and then, you know, some videos which I think are so, you know, so good, and I'm so proud of them, and like 500 people have watched them. And then another video which you're like, oh god, I'm not so sure about that. That's the one that gets like 100,000 views. You're like, I don't understand this, but it's the same. It's the same wherever, right? It's the algorithms. You can't understand them and explain them, but. No, I'd like to do more on YouTube, and like the statistics, that is the statistics section from Data Science Infinity. So for me to put that out there, it's me sort of saying, hey world, like this is how I teach, and there's a much bigger point around how I do the statistics tutorials, and I love the fact that you've sent people to them, because touching back to where I, you know, what I was saying at the very start, I didn't study math, I didn't study data science, so I'm. You know, I did a little bit of math in psychology, and I have always been relatively confident with math, you know, but only to a high, you know, to the end of high school. And then I never really went further than that. But that's been the biggest sort of silver lining. The fact that to learn math, I've had to go super intuitive about it. I can't deal with looking at the Greek letters on the paper and going, oh yeah, I get it. I don't get it. So I have to turn every one of those Greek letters into words. And I have to say, what happens when this one goes up? Oh, okay, this one goes down. Okay, that makes sense. That's why the confidence interval is like it is, or whatever it is. And that's how I teach. And I've had so much positive feedback from students and people on YouTube who found it so much easier to learn in that way. And the bonus of learning in that way, I've found, is that as soon as you learn in that way and you truly understand it, that's what makes you, to me, the best data scientist or the best data analyst, not being a savant at math sitting in the corner, being the smartest person in the world. I know this so intuitively that when I go to the head of marketing or the head of product who owns the customers that my data science solution is going to be affecting, I can explain it to them and they get it and they give the green light for my solution to be put into action. And therefore that happens and I start driving business value. And then the more I do that, I start getting promoted or I start getting paid more. But the person who's sitting in the corner, who's the smartest person in the world, but can't communicate that or can't show other people who don't quite exist at their same level, they don't get the same things built. I mean, these people can do other things, which I can't do, but I think there's a huge benefit in learning with a real focus on understanding rather than just ticking the box. Yeah, I've seen it. And then I'll just chuck the code in and it works. I think really understanding things is so important.
So if you had to describe the teaching philosophy behind Data Science Infinity and your YouTube channel in just a few words, how would you break it down? Good teaching equals what?
So I think kind of covering again what I've just been talking about would probably where I'd go. So we've covered this as well. So learning the right things, I think learning the right things to help you get success, which is landing that first job. But then just as importantly is learning in the right way. And I do, you know, I always say, you know, learning with a focus on intuition, understanding, and project-based application. So you really understand it. You can explain it intuitively to other people. And when you're learning, you're building things. And you understand it from that point of view. You understand why it won't work this way or why the data is going to cause problems this way. You know, actually getting your hands dirty on sort of real-world cases. So, that in essence is the teaching style of Data Science Infinity. It's intuitive. You're going to understand things properly in a way that you can understand them, you can explain them, and then, you know, you're going to build things with it. In the same way that you can then go to a hiring manager and say, look what I've built, and they'll go, cool, we do all of that stuff here, we need you, and therefore, you know, the job's done.
I completely agree with that. I was speaking with the head of AI for a large insurance company the other day. And that's literally how he got his job, is he built a prototype and sent it over to the head of data at this company. And they're like, that's exactly what we need. So they hired him to come build it for him. We've talked about a lot of the technical skills required to break into data analytics and data science and be successful, but your overall goal of getting people across the finish line and into the career and then be successful within the career also requires a lot of softer skills. What are some of the soft skills that you touch on and teach in your program?
So generally across the technical skills, like I was just, you know, it is all about that intuitive understanding. I think that's so key when it comes to the technical side of things. From the more true sort of softer skills, and I've mentioned this to somebody and they almost told me off the other day for saying soft skills. They hate the term soft skills. They like the word commercial skills. And I thought that's actually kind of a good point, you know. You know, softer skills almost, you know, it's a bit hard to understand what that means, but it is. I guess it's just not the true hardcore technical stuff, isn't it? But I think a huge framework, and there's a sort of a small section in the course devoted to this, you know, it's sort of a framework for how to take a business problem and turn it into a data science or analytical solution. Because so many people, and I'm guilty of this too, you know, in my career and even now, you know, you see a cool new algorithm or concept and you go, I'm going to force that into what I'm doing. I'm going to make that happen. I'm going to, you know, whether it was, you know, deep learning or whatever it may be, I'm going to make sure our company's using deep learning because I want to use it. It's awesome. And it is awesome, but you shouldn't start there. You should start at the business problem and then sort of work backwards towards an appropriate data science, or data analytical solution, right? You have to do that. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You end up going so far down the rabbit hole, the goalposts move, nobody understands what you're doing, and then it just sits on the shelf. It doesn't work. The reality is it doesn't work that way. So trying to give people that framework, and that helps them just, you know, when they do land a job or when they're talking to people in interviews, you know, trying to get that point across, because that resonates with hiring managers, especially when you've got the hiring manager and you've got maybe you're talking to, you know, in a second interview, you're talking to their boss, and their whole responsibility in their job is how do we add value and how do we stop wasting time and resource? And if you can talk to them about that and how you always like to start from the business problem and work back and find, you know, maybe it's not about applying the most complicated solution. It's about applying the appropriate solution. It's about knowing how to make decisions between different tools or skills along the way. You know, we could do this or we could do this. What are the pros and cons of both? Like learning, you know, finding yourself a framework for how you can do that successfully. I think those things are super, super important for people at all stages of their career, whether it's, you know, your first day on the job or if you've been in a career for 25 years, like reminding yourself to start with the true thing that we're trying to build. Like, why do we need this? Why is this needing to be done? And then walking back towards something that works. I think that's huge. Data storytelling, I think I brought in another expert who I know to create a mini section on data storytelling and give people some ideas and some frameworks. You know, hard skills, you know, Python or SQL, you can say, this is how the code works, and they can go and repeat it. Whereas softer skills are harder to teach. So I wanted to get somebody who was really focused on it and had put a lot of thought into how do we get that across? And it really, I think the best way to do that is with some frameworks that people can think about when they're pulling together a presentation or a, you know, even a conversation with somebody about a piece of work they're doing. Like, what are just some high-level frameworks that you can use to really help get the point across? So that's a really exciting new section in the course as well. To me, it's that intuition, the ability to communicate it, and always thinking about what the true problem is. I think those would be the key things for me.
I love that. Yeah, we do need to come up with a new name for soft skills. It's a military term. It literally meant anything not doing with like tanks. That's where that comes from. But you mentioned an important point of being able to take a problem and turn it into a data science or data analytics framework. We're seeing right now a directive from the top down rather than bottom up of, hey, use AI or use generative AI. They're not necessarily giving problems and saying like, hey, here's a use case, figure out how we can accomplish this. They're saying, hey, here's a tool or a technique, figure that out. How do you think AI is going to impact the data science and data analytics professions?
I agree with everything you've just said, and it annoys me so much because we've been there before with machine learning, with deep learning, where we're just forcing it in and we're saying we just need stuff done with this thing. And it's exactly what we were talking about before. It doesn't work, and you only discover that it doesn't work after a period of time when everyone's trying to do it, and then all of a sudden nothing gets built, money gets wasted. The people at the top who are allocating that money are asking, where's the return on that? And there isn't one. And then slowly and surely we learn the lesson again. And generative AI, well, if I'm going to go on a rant, the fact that we call it just AI in general, you know, the industry says, oh, we've now got AI. I mean, AI is such an old term, and AI has always covered machine learning and deep learning, and now we're just saying, oh, we could use AI. I don't know why it annoys me more than it should. Anyway, generative AI, I mean, that's something. I mean, it's incredible what it can do, and I don't for a second deny that it's going to change the industry in certain ways, and it's not going to change it in other ways. I think this concept, and a lot of people agree with this, I think, deep down, they think it's going to be a tool that helps people. And I think it is, and I use it in that way. You know, when you get stuck with an error message in Python and you give it to ChatGPT, it comes straight back and it tells you, and it gives you some code to work around it or to fix it. And that's unbelievably useful. It's like Stack Overflow on steroids, which we all relied on, and now we're all relying on that, on ChatGPT. But I personally don't think it's going to get rid of jobs. I think it's put a huge spotlight on data and data science and machine learning to the broader world. I think more and more people now know about this world of data science, and we're in the industry, so we think, well, everyone must know about it. But you talk to people who work as an accountant, or they work as a vet or whatever it is, and they don't really know or care about data science, you know, because it's not necessarily in there. But now they know about it, and they're thinking, well, how can I use my data, and how can I get into this, you know, this world of data and AI? And I think that's exciting. I think it'll be a really useful tool that will help people. I think as data scientists and data engineers and data analysts, it's not going to start cutting out what we do and replacing us. It's just going to make the to-do list is going to be longer. So now I have, you know, a Python script that I need to get up and running that would have taken me a week, and now it takes me a day. Well, then I'm going to do that in a day, and I'm not going to sit there for 4 days, and my manager's not going to let me just sit there for 4 days. They're going to say, well, that now takes a day. Here's the next piece. You know, the to-do list is going to get longer and longer and longer, and we're going to use AI to just do more. That's what I truly think will happen. It will shape the industry a little bit, but I think we're going to see in the next 6 months or a year, we're probably going to start seeing the same statistics that came out from, you know, data science 5-6 years ago. You know, 85% of projects fail. We're going to start seeing the realities of it, and people are going to start having more prudent, realistic view on what it is and what it isn't, while it continues to evolve, which, you know, will open new doors, and we don't know what's behind those doors. But long story short, I think it's a tool that will help us, and we'll end up doing more. We won't end up out of a job.
So as to-do lists continue to expand and as projects continue to fail, how do you help students deal with imposter syndrome?
Yeah, so that's a really big thing, isn't it? I know almost, I would say almost all of the students that come onto Data Science Infinity, whether they say it or not, they're a little bit intimidated by this field because it's, you know, it's got a reputation of being hardcore coding, hardcore mathematics. They, you know, the number of people that come on and say, will I be able to do it because I'm not good at math? And I just, I want to tell them, like, you're not good at math. You got told that, or you believed that when you were 7 years old and you went down the other path and you always said, I'm not a math person. But you can be. Math is just following a recipe. If you can make muffins, you can do math. It's honestly, you can if you get taught the right way. So skewing off the question a little bit there, so many people have imposter syndrome, or they have kind of, they don't feel confident that they can perhaps do these things, the coding, the math, the machine learning. And I think there's some key things you can do. And I do have a post that, a graphic that I created after I sat for a day or two and really thought about, like, what is it that always pops up? I think social media doesn't help, right? In any shape or form, you think of social media being negative, you know, when you think about Instagram and people seeing, you know, very athletic, fit people and thinking, well, I don't look like that, for example, and that having an effect on people. But it's the same in LinkedIn, right? People post about this amazing new deep learning model they've built or this thing they've built with AI, and people sit there going, well, everybody's ahead of me now. But you don't ever think, well, that person's just posting the end result after 3 weeks of grind where nothing worked and they didn't know how it operated and they had error messages, and you're just seeing the shiny final product, right? You forget that. So you're always looking at other people in a sense of comparison, and I don't think that's healthy. I think in this document I put together, I tried to summarize it as look to others for inspiration, but not in comparison. So, you know, like, look at other people and say, wow, that's amazing. I'm going to try and get there, but I'm not going to say, look at them, they're better than me, because they're not. They're just a person who's worked on something for 6 months and you haven't. So of course they've got somewhere. You could showcase something that you've done, which is brilliant. The idea of, and this is one that I can't remember where I heard this. It was some celebrity talking about how they talk to their kids. It was like Matthew McConaughey or something. I don't know where I heard this, but I really liked it. It was his mother or something had always said they weren't allowed to say, I can't. They're only allowed to say, I can't yet. You know, that idea of, yeah, I don't know how that works, but don't limit yourself and stop there. Just say, I can't do that yet. You have the potential to do anything. So if you put the hard work in, you'll get there. I think people should always celebrate small milestones. You know, it's hard in this, you know, like we're just saying, there's this world of seeing shiny, amazing things on social media. If you can pull yourself back and you fixed a problem in Python, or you built a Tableau dashboard that really helped somebody at work, like, to yourself, just celebrate that as a milestone. You did something pretty cool. So celebrate it, like, be positive about it. Don't complete it and then go, but it wasn't as good as whatever else. Like, celebrate those things. I think that's important. The other one, I'm trying to remember what they were. The other one I think is important is, whether you're starting a new job or you're starting on a new project or whatever it is, we're often guilty of thinking, okay, I, you know, what is step 10? I need to get step 10. This is what I need to do. But forget about step 10, right? Just think about step one, and then maybe, like, how does that lead to step two, and get there and then navigate from there. You know, don't obsess over things that are too big to comprehend. You know, just take the small steps, and similar to what I just said, celebrate those small milestones as you go. I think that helps people rationalize and bring this imposter syndrome down to something that they can manage.
And I can tell why you're such a great coach. You've got the psychology background, which makes your resources and your teaching extremely accessible. you're passionate, you've got the technical background, but you also do the research to make sure that you're competitive and confident in what you're saying. Andrew, it's been an incredible conversation. Where can people find you?
Well, thank you for having me. I've absolutely loved it. Thank you. So I'm on LinkedIn under Andrew-Jones-DSI. Andrew Jones is like the most common name in the world, so you'll probably find it a lot. But if you search me or Data Science Infinity, you will find me. On YouTube, I'm just under Andrew Jones. And then for Data Science Infinity, you can just find it at data-science-infinity.com. So there's all the details on how that program works, you know, the curriculum, you know, the support that you get, which is completely unlimited, dedicated one-to-one support, which I think is so, so huge for helping people get to where they want to be, and sort of differentiates it from a lot of other programs that sort of really thin out that support. And then it grows and evolves over time. You know, there's always new stuff coming. So it's not 6 months and you're cut off and, you know, well, I didn't become a data scientist, so now I'm, you know, I don't have a job. You have lifetime access, which means, you know, you're always learning and evolving. So I'm helping people land their second job, you know, 2 years after they landed the first. And that's really cool to see that. So all the info is there. If you want to go have a look, if this is something you want to do, definitely consider it. Get in touch. You can do that via the website. There's a free webinar, which is an hour long. And I go through a ton of stuff like resume, portfolio, the math you need to know. You get a PDF roadmap as well with it, which covers everything we discuss, because I try and cram as much into 60 minutes as we can, so it's pretty fast paced. And I also talk about, you know, Data Science Infinity in that. But yeah, go and have a look at Data Science Infinity, and if you have any questions, I'm here to help. I'll always reply for people who are looking to get into the field.
Beautiful. We'll drop all the links below. Andrew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.